Welcome back. It's Chronology, an episode-by-episode recap of WWF's Monday Night Raw, starting at the beginning and going until we stop. My name is Dave Thackera. That's Neil Trauma over there.
Here I
am. Hey, Neil, what's up?
I'm over here. I'm doing well. A little bit of peeling back the curtain here, Dave, for all the listeners. You see, normally Dave and I record this show during the day. We take, a half hour or so off from our quote-unquote busy work days to do this Raw podcast for y'all. But because of, circumstances this week, we're recording it on a Saturday night, which is exciting because it means we're both drinking. And being slightly buzzed is going to make this episode of Raw more interesting. Am I right?
It's the only possible thing that could make this episode of Raw better than... better than it actually was.
Dave, I am so over this WrestleMania 9 build, and I texted you this during the week when I was watching the show. I am so over this.
Well, let's take another sip, and let's recap where we are, both Please. In the wrestling world and the real world. In reality, it was March 8th, 1993. This was 4 days after the Directors Guild of America awarded Steven Spielberg all of the honors for his work for Schindler's List. It was just a few hours before Lenny Kravitz released the epic album Are You Gonna Go My Way, with the incredible music video that came along with the title track. And this was the same day, March 8th, 1993, that the world was introduced to Beavis and Butthead for the very first time on MTV.
Man, now, did you look it up, Dave? I wonder what got better ratings, Raw or Beavis and Butthead? Were they on head-to-head, I wonder?
I don't think they were on head-to-head, but I gotta imagine that the same crowd was watching both. I don't know that for sure. I don't know that for a fact. I just know it to be true.
We'll just go with that. It's 2021, and if in your heart you think it's true, that just means it is.
All right. So in the wrestling world, when we went off the air last week, as we're going on the air this week in the epic soap opera that is WWF, what is happening as this episode starts?
Well, I mean, we are, like I said, we're building to WrestleMania 9, and they're building as the big match, and they're calling it half of the double main event. It's getting semi-main event billing, but honestly, this is the match they're putting all of their actual effort into, which is Hulk Hogan coming out of retirement, teaming with Brutus the Barber Beefcake, who has just come out of retirement, to challenge Money Inc. for the tag team championships of the world. And we open up the show with the Mega Maniacs, Hogan and Beefcake, doing this wacky, ridiculous, coke-fueled promo about strapping the tag belts to the front of their Harleys. Hogan claims that they've been training for the match by hitting Beefcake in the face repeatedly with a briefcase. And then Hogan, for some reason that I'll never understand, decides to sing an a cappella verse from The King and I. And then Jimmy Hart reveals that he has told the Mega Maniacs all of Money Inc.'s weaknesses, which I suppose is the only part of this promo that makes any sort of sense. I'm sorry, Dave. I've said this before. I'm probably going to say it again before WrestleMania 9. But in my mind, Money Inc. are absolutely the baby faces in this feud. I don't care what anybody says. They're right. They're the good guys. This feud is stupid. It's ridiculous. I'm so sick of this.
The feud is stupid, for sure, but they can't be the baby faces. IRS is taking to the microphone every single time and reminding everyone that they haven't paid their fair share of taxes. They're not the baby faces. This is two bad tag teams with one of them supposed to be over, and clearly they just miscalculated on everything about this match.
Look at this. Listen to me, Dave. Hear me out on this, okay? Imagine, now here's what happened. Here's what happened in this feud. Beefcake had this terrible accident that destroyed his face. He came out of retirement as a professional wrestler, okay? And he said, I'm going to fight people for a living. However, if I happen to get hit in the face one time, I could die. Now, imagine this. Imagine we were going to start doing this podcast, okay? And I was like, yeah, Dave, I'm all ready to do this Raw podcast with you. We're going to do this. We're going to do these shows. Oh, but by the way, if I speak for longer than 15 seconds at a time, I could die. I could pass on, okay? And then you agree. You say, okay, Neil, we'll do this podcast anyway. This is like then my best friend coming out and getting pissed at you for letting me do this podcast. It's like, no, you Like, you can't speak for 30 seconds at a time. You shouldn't host a podcast. You should do something else. You should write a blog, for instance, or you should draw cartoons of wrestlers, but you shouldn't host a wrestling podcast. I hate these people. He's a wrestler, and I'm supposed to be mad at Money Inc. because they touched him in the face one time. They're not wrong.
All I know is that this promo just made me really uncomfortable for all of the reasons you described, but also because Brutus had his gardening shears, his hedge clippers, and he was swinging them about to and fro, and he got really close to the Hulkster's face. So Brutus's face, if this promo went slightly differently, might not have been the only one possibly career-ending and horribly damaged and disfigured.
Yeah, career-ending damaging face injuries.
Times
Jeez,
two.
Jiminy Christmas.
Well, we eventually got into the episode. Macho Man Randy Savage apparently just came from the black hole. I think the Raiders were still playing in Los Angeles at the time, but either way,
I think so.
Macho was in black and silver. He was not the only one. Rob Bartlett also wearing a black and white tuxedo. And Vince McMahon looking like he should be singing in an a cappella group wearing a tuxedo still at this time, even though they want to drive home the point that they are uncut, uncensored, and uncouth, and they're all wearing formal wear. But we got right into the action. Match number one, Money Inc., the promo targets from what we just saw, taking on a totally random tag team of El Matador, Tito Santana, and Virgil. And Vince McMahon brought us to the air by saying, "What a tag team combination with El Matador and Virgil." It's like, really? Because seems like this was just a dartboard and they threw darts to see who was getting paired up against Money Inc. on that night.
I'm going to say it's not 100% that, because believe it or not, believe it or not, Dave, El Matador and Virgil have actually teamed in the past.
No.
To feud with Ted DiBiase and friends. They appear on the Tuesday in Texas pay-per-view as a tag team to challenge the combination of Ted DiBiase and the Repo Man, our old buddy, who Ted DiBiase at the time had hired to repossess his million-dollar belt from Virgil. But be that as it may, it's not like they were a regular tag team combination. And if you want to know how high up on the totem pole of wrestlers Virgil is at this point in 1993, I am almost positive that he wasn't even in the Royal Rumble. This dude was not, I'm almost positive, this dude was not even in the Royal Rumble.
Wow.
So when you think of the idiots that they put into that 1993 Royal Rumble, pointless buffoons with no chance of winning, the fact that Virgil somehow didn't even manage to qualify, I don't really like his chances here. But what I did like, I don't know if you noticed this, they did not make a point on commentary, I don't think, of making too much out of the DiBiase-Virgil connection there. Of course, they go back a very long way in the WWF. I did love, if you watched before the match, if you were paying attention to the wrestlers instead of the announcers, DiBiase was pantomiming to Virgil that if he would like, he could give up on the whole match and come back over and shine DiBiase's shoes. He gave him the opportunity to do that. And that was a highlight of the show for me, honestly.
Well, since this is Chronology After Dark with both of us having a beverage in hand, anytime you say something as the seasoned, you know everything about wrestling fan, and me being the, yeah, I kind of like it, but I can jump in and out kind of a guy. Every time you say something that just absolutely floors me, I'm going to take a drink of my beer. So
take a drink.
Probably going to be hammered by the end of this this podcast. But we move on. The match came and went. It was full of sneaks and distractions. It's like that wrestling trope of like the ref is distracted, so we're going to let the other tag team member get in a couple of hits. It was just a match full of that. But eventually, no surprise to anyone, Money Inc., they won the match.
I would certainly hope they won the match.
Then we had a recap of Shawn Michaels and Tatanka as their feud wraps up. Again, we're building to WrestleMania with a Shawn Michaels-Tatanka match. So we're living in a world in 1993 where some random mid-card guy like Tatanka straight up pins Shawn Michaels multiple times in a row. As we'd move towards the Attitude Era and Shawn Michaels wearing the big belt, that would never, ever happen. And that's why it's so jarring and strange for me to see it happen now.
Yeah, I mean, he's sort of just wacky mid-card heel Shawn Michaels here, of course, at this point. And Tatanka is kind of getting a big push. He is, after all, the undefeated Native American Tatanka. And, you know, all of us seasoned wrestling fans back in the Attitude Era, when people made a big deal about Goldberg's streak, we were like, dude, Tatanka was undefeated for like 2 years before Goldberg. Don't be telling me about no Goldberg. He can't take down the Native American Tatanka and his and his tomahawk chops. Chopping. Well,
after the recap came and went, we saw the model Rick Martel in something that we would see quite often tonight. He came to the ring, the model Rick Martel, and started harassing the Raw ring girl, saying she's got no class, kicking her out of the ring. He's going to show you how to properly, as a model, again, he's the model Rick Martel, hold up the ring card and walk around. Nobody can model better than the model.
Yeah, that was stupid.
I liked it. I thought it was stupid, but I also thought in this whole episode, it's kind of the stupid little gimmick they could hold their hat on. You know, they can hang their hat on and just carry the whole episode along. I didn't mind it.
Yeah, it's stupid in the way I like wrestling to be stupid. Like, it's stupid. Like, this guy is an idiot. He walks around with a big pin that says, yes, I'm a model, because his name is The Model. So he comes out and harasses the other models. I mean, it's a way that no human being would actually act in real life, which is kind of what makes it excellent.
Well, when we come back from commercial, match number two happens, where the aforementioned Tatanka is going against some guy named Phil Apollo, who looks like he never actually did a sit-up in his entire life.
Yeah, Apollo, some idiot. I mean, there's some other idiot named Apollo that actually goes on to portray the Doink character later on, and we'll get to that point when we get there. Turns out, after I Googled it, it's not this guy, which is the only interesting thing I have to say about this, is the jobber wasn't Doink. So, okay, Tatanka wins. He's on his way to WrestleMania. I don't know, dude, what do you want me to say about this match? It was a Tatanka squash, just so they could talk about the Mania match.
Well, then we went on to the WrestleMania report, the highlight of each and every of these early episodes of Raw. They're bringing us the rundown of episodes. It's Money Inc. versus the Mega Maniacs, the tag title, and Mean Gene Okerlund makes a big point of saying it's now half of the double main event. They're not trying to sell you on Bret Hart and Yokozuna. We've got another main event, folks. Then they had Bret Hart and Yokozuna give interviews, which, it's not horrible, but it's not great.
I don't know, man. I don't know what to say about this Bret Hart Yokozuna thing. It's like, I get it. Like, it's a good pro wrestling build. You have the plucky underdog babyface who takes on all challengers. You have the giant undefeated monster who he won a Royal Rumble to get the title shot, but they forgot to like actually give them any heat. And I mean, I guess that's kind of looking at it through 2021 eyes, or you need to look at it through 1993 eyes. But the entire issue here is Bret has the title. Yoko wants the title. We're not going to do anything else to put anything else behind the match and hope that sells you on it.
Right.
And I just feel like, in 1993, Bret was not the like over the top character that I think could just sell a match based purely on I'm the champion, I'm going to defend my title. I think there maybe needed to be a little more juice. And I mean, keeping spoilers out of it, they do put a little more juice on this, I know, between here and WrestleMania, and I'm sure we'll get to that sooner than later, but there's really no juice to this right now. It's like it's so low down on the matches that they're actually putting effort behind that it just really feels like an afterthought here.
Yeah, and the whole company seems to just be mailing this in. Like, don't get me wrong, there's good performances all over the place if you look really hard for them, but it's really hard to find anything truly compelling about this, even reflected in Mean Gene Okerlund. He's a pro's pro. He's a wrestling promo announcer kind of a guy, but I found it hard to believe that he didn't just tape, like, six of these WrestleMania reports a month ago, and they're just slowly airing them out.
Yeah, because it's all gonna be the greatest WrestleMania of all time, the family entertainment capital of the world.
Tickets are still available.
Yeah, tickets still available. It's the same nonsense. And you know, rebooking WrestleMania 9 has become like a bit of a trope on the internet, in the internet wrestling community at this point. Like, we all know this if you've been around long enough. I mean, you could very easily rebook WrestleMania 9 in a way that it's a good show instead of what we got. But I mean, this is what we're getting, so that's what we're here to talk about. And it it's just so underwhelming. Like, I was really hoping that this would somewhat redeem WrestleMania 9, because I don't hate WrestleMania 9 on its own as a standalone show. But when you watch this build and then see what you got, it's like, man, you know, just, it's kind of just, it really is, it's like wearing me out watching it.
Well, before the WrestleMania report was done, we did get something that I'd never seen on Raw before, a Paul Bearer sighting. As they're talking up the Undertaker and Giant Gonzalez match, Paul Bearer whips out the full Paul Bearer persona in the promo for that match. Now, I don't want to ruin anything for you, but this would be the Undertaker's third WrestleMania, Neil. Did you know that?
He'd already
beaten Jimmy Snuka at WrestleMania 7, then Jake the Snake Roberts at WrestleMania 8. Neil, would The Undertaker continue to be unbeaten after this WrestleMania? I guess we'll have to wait and find out.
Oh, dude, no way. The Giant Gonzalez is like 9 feet tall. There's no way The Undertaker's winning this match, man.
Match number three of this episode of Raw. Papa Shango against Mike Edwards. Now,
yeah, what is that? What are they doing? Like, why?
They're
why
making such a huge issue of the fact that this episode of Raw is live. And two of the matches that we've seen so far is some random, no-character, real-name guy who looks like they just pulled him off the street or out of the crowd from the Bronx, and he's going against Papa Shango.
Why is Papa Shango still having squash matches? Like, I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that I paid any attention to this match at all anyway, but like, why is this on the show?
I don't know. But as long as we're here, Papa Shango, played by Charles Wright, is this your favorite Charles Wright gimmick, Papa Shango? Or do you prefer the Godfather or the Goodfather or Kama Mustafa?
It's gotta be the Godfather, right? I mean, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, but it's got to be the Godfather, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Match number four. Oh, just in case we didn't mention it, I think we did. Papa Shango beat Mike Edwards in a...
Oh, well, thank God. Thank God we cleared that up.
Match number four.
What's the next match? I mean, it can't be worse than the Papa Shango match, could it?
Yes, it can. It's 43-year-old Bob Backlund against another random dude named Tony DeMoro. They're doing these live shows with randos because I think Vince was convincing them that they could come to the match and wrestle if they sold a bunch of tickets to their friends and family.
What? I don't know. I mean, the Raws, I'm not going to lie to you, Dave. When we get to 94, they're all like this. But the 93 Raws, I promise you, they do get better. And I didn't realize there were any of them that were this bad. Rob Bartlett at one point during this match calls the jobber DeMoro, quote, a pant load, which is probably the most accurate thing he's ever said. And that's going to be my new favorite word to describe these shows, because this show was most certainly a pant load.
After this, the match came, the match went. Bob Backlund actually did a pretty decent finishing move to get the match off of our screens. And then we recap Headlock on Hunger, or is it a new Headlock on Hunger?
Wait, Dave. I guess I should admit that I didn't pay attention to this either. What was the big finishing move?
He's sort of like, it was this weird suplex. It's like reminiscent of a bad and not nearly as powerful F5 or something like that. Go back and watch it. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't the cross-faced chicken wing.
Do you know, what his move was when he was champion in the early 80s? Bob Backlund's big move. He created this move and made it popular.
What was
in America? The atomic drop.
Wow. That's a pretty good move.
That was Bob Backlund's finishing move. It won matches.
All right. Now it's an opener.
Yeah, I don't know. Headlock on Hunger is apparently still around. I only ever mention it in my notes because I know you were annoyed by it in the early days. It's your thing. Headlock on Hunger. I don't know, dude. I guess maybe they're doing another charity show. Great.
Maybe. I think this really tells people a lot about, we're doing an episode by episode recap of these shows, and we're not paying attention halfway through.
This show was awful.
Rick Martel comes back out.
Rick Martel comes back out,
kicks another Raw girl out of the ring, saying she has no class. They were cute, you know. It was what it is. But Martel's getting a whole lot of heat because the girls are pretty. The crowd wants to see them. He's kicking him out of the ring. He's clearly the bad guy for the night. And that brings us to our last match. after a quick interview with Rick Martel, we see Rick Martel going against Mr. Perfect in clearly what was the highlight of this episode, because it was, by all accounts, a pretty good match.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good match, except that we didn't see the finish because they did it during the commercial.
What?
Like, this, okay, I'm convinced now. This had,
we had to be intentional. We had two commercial breaks during the match. And if you're going to stop the action that much, why can't you time it outright?
I think, Dave, this has to be intentional. I think Vince's idea in these early shows was, we're doing this live show and, you know, anything can happen. You've always got to be on your toes. We did that Undertaker match where they only wrestled for 2 minutes and then the show had to go off the air. There was that other stupid show where they pretended that the microphones didn't work. And I think this is more of that. I think they are intentionally screwing things up so that they could be like, this is a live show where anything can happen. That's the only possible explanation for this.
No, we're 8 episodes in, and they've only done a couple of truly live shows. I think it's very clearly the producer is somebody's brother-in-law, or maybe it's even Shane McMahon or someone in the company with the last name of McMahon, and they just truly don't know what they're doing, or they can't communicate to the ref to, like, stall the match for another 30 seconds to get it finished live.
They have to be able to tell the ref when to go home. I mean, they've done this forever in wrestling. There's no way. I don't know. I think there's no way it wasn't intentional, but I don't know. Yeah, I mean, decent match, but I mean, you're friggin' the way they, it ends during the commercial. So I don't know what, I don't know, dude.
Well, it does end, and it ends with Mr. Perfect defeating the model Rick Martel, just in case you're keeping track of wins and losses at home. Again, it was a pretty good match. These guys are both good. I mean, the model Rick Martel, he was one of those, like, early Royal Rumble Iron Men from a couple years ago, right? He stayed in the match for, like,
absolutely.
An hour.
I mean, model's a solid hand. I mean, model and Perfect should have been better than a war. I mean, should have been. They just let them, with this crappy show, they should have just given them the whole last half hour of the show and let them go and have a great match. Like, they could do that. Remember that one great show in the beginning where they had Flair and Tito and they had Perfect and the Rooster and they were both actually, like, really good matches where they let them wrestle? There's no reason why they couldn't have done that here, but, you know, they didn't. And I mean, it's a thing. This WrestleMania build is a slog, dude. If this is any indication, and they do the preview in next week and it doesn't sound any better.
Well, let's move on. Since the title or the final match came and went, we had our winner, even if it wasn't a commercial break. Neil, what are your closing thoughts before I get to ask you something?
That was the main event, by the way. The main event is the match where they chose to have the finish happening during the commercial, by the way. It wasn't the Bob Backlund versus D'Amoro match. No, it was the main event. But yeah, I mean, my closing thoughts are just basically, this is kind of a slog. Like, I get that, you know, shows with squash matches, this is how they did it back in the day. I have no problem with that. In fact, I'm all for it. I kind of wish that they did this model a little bit more with NXT than they've been doing these days. Like, I have no problem with squash matches. It's just that, like, nothing happened on this show. The only thing that actually advanced the WrestleMania build was, like, maybe the Mega Maniacs promo where they announced that they made it a tag title match, but I think that would have been announced during the weekend shows anyway. So this was literally just squash matches where they talk about WrestleMania and not even really the interesting matches on WrestleMania. So this was possibly the worst Raw we've ever watched on this podcast.
If we're ranking them, it's definitely bottom two.
In the words of Rob Bartlett, this show was a pant load.
All right. So let me ask you something. Again, you are the wrestling, we're going to call you the expert
Let's
on this show.
The aficionado.
I'm the aficionado, and I come in and come out as I please, and more often than not, I'm out. So let me ask you this, Neil Trauma. We saw Bob Backlund on the episode today. Bob Backlund was WWF champion, like, for a long time. How?
Well, I mean, like I said, the 80s, I've said this before, it was a different time, Dave. I mean, the early 80s when Backlund held the title, it was a different time. And up until that point, the WWF, as I think it was at the beginning of his reign, was booked differently. Vince McMahon Sr., he always wanted to have a strong babyface champion. And they had Bruno Sammartino for many, 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 many years, who was almost like a prototype Hogan in the sense that he was like a big, strong guy. And that was how he won, by being a strong man. And then you had Pedro Morales, who was a little bit more of like a fiery sort of character. And Vince decided he wanted to change it up, and he wanted to go with a guy with a legit amateur background. And as the story goes, he actually wanted Jack Briscoe, famously of the Briscoe brothers, brother of Gerald Briscoe, who would go on to become famous in retirement during the Attitude Era. But he wanted Jack Briscoe. He didn't get Jack Briscoe, so he settled on Bob Backlund, who was a legitimately great amateur wrestler, and he just wanted a clean cut All-American boy as his champion, which is what he got with Backlund. And Backlund had successful years as champion. He did. I will give him that. I mean, he was completely blown out of the water when wrestling changed forever, when the Hulk Hogan era hit, because suddenly it became much, much, much more about flash and, you know, over the top bombastic characters, which Backlund very much was not. So it's not so much a problem with Backlund during his reign as it is a problem with the presentation of Backlund here in 1993. But lucky for us, eventually that presentation will change. So in a rare moment, they did learn from their mistakes, but, you know,
so after hearing that, can I assume that Bob Backlund is your MVP for episode 8?
No. my MVP, you know, I mean, this show was so terrible. Like, it was impossible to pick somebody. And I was actually really close to picking DiBiase, just because I got such a kick out of his shtick with Virgil earlier on. But I guess I'm just going to go with Perfect, because he's been a solid hand through most of these early shows, and we've never given him the award. So I'm going with Perfect.
I choose the model Rick Martel. I think that the shtick that he did with the ring girls basically moving the episode along, and I thought he had a really good match at the end, even though we didn't see the big finish. The model Rick Martel, very clearly my MVP for this episode, which wraps it up. Episode 8, thank God, it's done!
And I actually only got through one beer. I thought this was going to be a 2-beer show, easily, but it wasn't. I'm just going to enjoy my beer now in by myself when we go off the air. But thank you, Dave.
Chronology After Dark. I love it.
Thank you, Dave, for another fun show. Even though I'll tell you that I much, much, much enjoyed myself more doing this podcast with you than I did watching this episode of Raw. And, of course, you're listening to us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're going to find us there. You're going to find us on Facebook. You're going to find us all around the interwebs. So thank you for joining us wherever you may be listening to us here week in and week out. We'll be back next week with another episode of Chronology, which apparently will feature Kamala, Razor Ramon, Typhoon, and my broadcast partner, Dave Thackeray's former broadcast partner for 1 week on a classic rock radio station, Mr. Bam Bam Bigelow.
I thought we agreed never to speak of that again, but we will be back. Thanks, Neil.
Take it easy.